Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Welcome to How to Fix It. I'm John Avalon, author, journalist, historian. And the purpose of this podcast is to focus on finding solutions to the problems we face, not just endlessly fixating on the problems themselves. And joining us this week are two great luminaries of American civics and government and law. We've got Judge Michael Luttig and former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson. Between them, these are two men who, on the respective right and left sides of the aisles at times, have maintained a consistent commitment to forming a more perfect union. And they are the co-authors of a new American Bar Association report called From the Task Force on American Democracy, in which they and many other luminaries, including the Bulwark's Bill Kristol, cut forward and laid out specific solutions to what they feel is afflicting our democracy. And I want to break down each of these as well as get to news of the day. Judge, Secretary Johnson, it's good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
It set the table here because this report, American Bar Association is a pretty buttoned up organization. This report expresses a real crisis of confidence in American democracy. Is that how you see it right now?
First of all, John, thanks for having us. And I was drawn to the name of your podcast, How to Fix It. Rather than complain about the problems, how do we solve the problems? When I was in government, there was a sign above my office door, "We get stuff done." And so I'm all about solutions as well as identifying the problem. I was asked to co-chair this ABA task force 2.5 years ago. I said yes, because I was asked to co-chair it with one of my modern day heroes, Judge Michael Luttig, who's a real modern day profile in courage.
Yes.
We assembled an extraordinarily bipartisan, nonpartisan group of Americans, not just lawyers, because lawyers do not have a monopoly on wisdom by any means. It's a very bipartisan group. You identified Bill Kristol, former Supreme Court of Ohio Justice Maureen O'Connor, Ken Chenault, Ken Frazier, Richard Haass, Dick Gephardt, Larry Thompson, former deputy AG in the Bush years. I could go on and on. And we put together this report with 11 recommendations on how to fix it, how to fix our American democracy. And I know you'll get into the specifics, but the underlying point here is we started this 2 years ago, and we were aiming to finish last summer in 2024. But it was such a volatile election season, we decided to wait till the dust settles and then issue this in August of 2025. We didn't want to respond to the crisis of the week. And what we intended to do here was to look at the underlying problems in our American democracy today and put forth recommendations that are as relevant today as they will be a year or 10 years from now. long-term solutions to what ails our democracy these days.
And Judge, you lay out, the report lays out 12 specific areas, and I want to dig deep into more than a half dozen of them. The first is reinvigorate American civics education. This is near and dear to my heart. You note that we've gutted funding for civics education over a long period of time, but you specifically talk about increasing funding, federal funding K-12, building on a bipartisan piece of legislation from Congress in 2002, the Civic Secures Democracy Act. My question to you is not only what that would do, but given that this is so bipartisan, how the hell hasn't it gotten done yet?
John, the one thing that we heard from everyone during the course of the two-year task force was that there was a need for civics education in America today more than ever. No one said otherwise, and everyone said that's what is needed. Now, it was obviously too late at that point to address the problems that were besetting America and America's democracy. But we should have reinvigorated that civics education long before today. And we all know that for years now, there has been a decline in the civics knowledge of American citizens to the point that the statistics show today, Americans writ large have very little knowledge and almost no appreciation for civics in America.
It's outrageous. It's essential. I mean, we a part of the purpose of public schools, going back to, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, was to build good citizens. And this should be bipartisan. And given that this bipartisan bill was put forward in 2022, you know, it should have passed when Democrats had control. But this is something Republicans have been calling for as well. And certainly they've gutted the Department of Education, but this is something that needs to get done. So civics education is number one.
Let me add to that this wrinkle. Today, certainly the President of the United States and his Republican allies have a very different vision of civics education than the one that's existed in the United States for almost 250 years. So next year, for instance, we are going to celebrate our 250th anniversary, if you will, since the founding of the country. Mm-hmm. And the president has already begun to set forth a different vision for America than the one that has existed since the founding almost 250 years ago. So the bottom line is,
put a little meat on those bones. I mean,
civics education, it's going to be come in a different form than we would have expected and wanted.
Yes. I mean, there certainly has been a broad bipartisan consensus with the Trump team has undercut. And the devil's always in the details. I'm very concerned America 250 is going to sort of poison patriotism for many folks because it will look partisan. And that is exactly what it cannot be, and never has been. Let's go to the second one. We've got citizen redistricting commissions. You point out that there are 18 states that have independent citizen redistricting commissions. California has paused its independent redistricting commission for 3 years in retaliation for what Texas just did to carve up five seats for Republicans at the president's request. I mean, this is so basic in terms of ensuring more competitive general elections, moving powers from the extremes, but the trends from the bench and particularly in red states, though not exclusively, seem to be going in dramatically different directions. What's the best way to get this done, Jake?
Just to go back briefly to the issue of civics education, that section of the report was really championed by Richard Haass,
sure,
President Emeritus of the Council on Foreign Relations. And you know, one of the things that we say is that the nation has veered away from civics education in favor of STEM. And that's, we believe the pendulum needs to swing back again. The favorite thing I used to do is naturalize new citizens when I was Secretary of DHS. I am convinced that the process of getting to naturalized citizenship requires civics education, and the naturalized citizen probably knows more about our government than your average American-born U.S. citizen. So citizen redistricting commissions. This is a perfect example of what I was saying before. We wanted to put forth recommendations that were as relevant then as they are now, as they will be 5 years from now. And when we started writing this, we were not confronted with this mid-decade effort to redraw legislative district lines. That only broke out a couple of months ago. What we found is that when you put it to citizens, a ballot initiative to amend a state constitution, it is wildly popular because citizens believe that this process should be taken out of the hands of politicians. We now have a situation where there are some 400 safe seats in the House of Representatives out of 435 because of legislative gerrymandering, to the point where the politicians pick their voters. The voters don't pick the politicians. Mm-hmm. And when you put it in the hands, when you put the drawing of district lines in the hands of people who are not politicians, who are not political, basic citizens who believe in democracy, you recreate legislative district lines in a way such that the elected representatives are re-incentivized to appeal to the political center rather than the political extremes on the right and the left. And I think that is fundamental, along with open primaries and so forth. I think that is fundamental to rejiggering our democracy in a more sustainable, healthy way.
Jack, I couldn't agree more, but what do you make of, you know, there are two fronts in this fight that have been winding its way through the Supreme Court.
Yep.
One has to do with the apparent gutting of the Voting Rights Act, which is still to be officially decided. But that itself has obviously driven a lot of redistricting in the past. And this court does seem intent on getting rid of it. What are your thoughts on that?
Judge Luttig is the Supreme Court expert. It does seem like our court is becoming more and more predictable in how it's going to rule. And in our Solicitor General's office in DOJ, I'm sure is very strategic about the cases they decide to bring to the U.S. Supreme Court, or, you know, the people who are litigating these cases, I'm sure are very strategic about when they take these cases to the court. You know, politically, we're in a situation where each side feels like they have to fight fire with fire. So Republicans started this in Texas. Democrats responded in California and a bunch of other places. And it's a downward spiral in our democracy, in my judgment. And I don't know where it all ends and how you get the political forces in America to decide on bilateral disarmament. But in my judgment, we're in a downward spiral toward further gerrymandering.
This episode of How to Fix It is brought to you by Wild Grain. Now, Wild Grain is the first bake-from-frozen subscription box for artisanal breads and seasonal pastries and fresh pastas. Plus, all items conveniently bake in 25 minutes or less. Good for families. Now, unlike many store-bought options, Wild Grain uses simple ingredients you can actually pronounce and a slow fermentation process that can be easier on your belly and richer in nutrients and antioxidants. Wild Grain's boxes are fully customizable. They are constantly adding seasonal and limited-time products for you to enjoy. In addition to their classic box, they got a gluten-free box and a plant-based box. Now, I'm personally pretty excited about the Tear and Share cranberry pecan rolls and the Parmesan herb biscuits. I think they'll go over big here at the home. And for a limited time, Wild Grain is offering our listeners $30 off your first box, plus free croissants. Get that, free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/fixit to start your subscription. Now, you heard me, free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/fixit. That's wildgrain.com. Fix it, or you can use the promo code fix it, all caps, one word, at checkout.
Judge, let's go to you on the court, but I want you to pay particular attention to the Texas decision that just came down. A lower court had rejected Texas's partisan gerrymander mid-district done at the president's request to get five seats. Supreme Court basically gave it a green light, saying that it wasn't about race. It was about partisan power grabs, and that's just fine with them, which is a complete reversal of what the court said 20 years ago.
That's exactly right, John. And that is to tell Americans where this court is going on gerrymandering. Prior to this latest ruling, the court most notably had stepped away from gerrymandering, saying essentially that it is rarely, very rarely a question of constitutional law, and that it is almost invariably a question of politics, or, to use your words, power politics. And so I was not surprised at all with this latest decision out of Texas. I would be surprised if there were ever again a gerrymandering that was invalidated by the Supreme Court of the United States.
That's a gut punch to those of us who believe, as you have recommended, that we need more citizen redistricting commissions and less politicians drawing their own lines. Does that mean then the only recourse we have is a constitutional amendment?
Well, no, I implicitly carved out of that the citizen redistricting. because
okay. So give us some hope. Clarify.
Well, that's the hope I'm going to give you right now. Is that if independent, citizen redistricting were to take hold nationwide, for instance, and operate in the way that Secretary Johnson just explained it should and ought, then that would remedy the problem. And the Supreme Court then would rarely invalidate those redistricting plans by the several states. But the problem is in getting these independent citizen redistricting plans, because there's nothing more political in this country than that. And there's no party, and therefore few states, that are going to willingly embrace the independent citizen redistricting.
Well, particularly if it's blue states doing independent redistricting and red states trying to exploit it for maximum gain. I mean, the North Carolina maps are an outrage in a state that is basically a third, a third, and a third, where they've drawn 85 and 90% of the seats for themselves, and it rarely gets discussed. Secretary Johnson, I want to move on to the next one, which is not open nonpartisan primaries. Amen to that. Ranked choice voting and fusion voting. It's notable to me you've layered all these things together. I agree completely. Ranked choice voting works best with open primaries that are nonpartisan. And fusion voting, which basically allows different lines to exist itself, not widely adopted. We have a history of it here in New York, where I'm speaking from. But talk about why you think those four prescriptions work well together and why we need to see more of it, because God knows we do.
These recommendations, this particular set, is central to our report, in my judgment. We talk about how Americans distrust their government. We cite the Pew Trust in Government survey that's done every year, every couple of years, how trust in government has spiraled downward. Americans are drowning in conspiracy theories. They're deeply suspicious of the institutions of government. We believe that politicians, elected politicians today, have a lot to do with that. They have pandered to that level of suspicion with extreme rhetoric, appealing to the extreme right, extreme left. And so a big part of what we believe needs to be done to restore our democracy is re-incentivize political behavior. The way you re-incentivize political behavior is you get politicians incentivized to appeal to the political center as opposed to the political extremes. Open nonpartisan primaries is a big step in that direction. If you have an open primary where everybody from John Avalon to AOC to Marjorie Taylor Greene have to compete for the same set of voters,
yep,
they're going to appeal to the center, not the extremes. And then you have a runoff between the top two or top three. Ranked choice voting is intended in much the same direction. Fusion voting, you're right, we had this in New York historically. When I was growing up, first starting to vote, you know, you could vote for Representative Hamilton Fish Jr. from Hudson Valley on the Republican line or on the conservative line or the right to life line. You could vote for the Democrat on the Democratic line or the Liberal Party line. And so if you incentivize politicians to want to compete for more than one endorsement, then hopefully they want to compete for a broader swath of the electorate. We leave it to individual states to decide what works best for them. We're not in a position to say one size fits all. And so in certain states, there's ranked choice voting, but not fusion voting, for example. Alaska is an example that has open primaries and ranked choice voting. I personally believe that certain electorates may not be sophisticated enough to engage in ranked choice voting. I mean, how many voters know enough about, you know, person number six on the ballot to be able right. to make an informed choice? And in more sophisticated electorates, perhaps New York City, that might work. So we leave it to the states to decide whether to embrace one, two, or all three of these suggested reforms. But the underlying intent is to re-incentivize politicians to appeal to the political center and not the political extremes.
All right, moving on. Next recommendation is reducing partisan influence in election administration. And Judge, I want to go to you on this because you use Wisconsin's Government Accountability Board as a model, and that uses retired judges to sort of oversee elections. Certainly, the partisan oversight of elections is a disaster, as we have seen. Tell us why Wisconsin's model with using retired judges is what we should be more widely adopting.
John, it's just common sense to everyone in America that you cannot have a democracy that is enforced by partisans at the election booth. That, of course, is what has occurred over the past several cycles. We must fix this if we fix nothing else. Now, the Wisconsin example is just one example of how to remove partisanship from the elections, but there are many others. And I wouldn't even think that having judges do it is the preferred way. But we must, if we don't use judges, we must find others who will ensure the nonpartisan oversight of elections in America. The task force was working very hard on that during the course of the 2 years leading up to this last election. We believe, and Jay can correct me if I'm wrong, that this last election was essentially free of partisanship, the election itself, the apparatus of the election. Of course, Donald Trump, you know, proclaimed that was the case only because he had won. So we don't have his buy-in to it, but we'll never have his buy-in to it in advance because he will only agree to the election results if he wins.
That's what's so, one of many things that's dangerous about this time is that right now we've got elections are only seen as legitimate by the right, too many on the right when they win. We've got good people like Stephen Richter in Arizona who lost a race. He was a Republican, but less partisan. We need these kinds of reforms. This is prophylactic and it's absolutely essential. How to Fix It is sponsored by Aura Frames. Now, Aura Frames is the answer to every holiday gifting moment. You don't have to struggle to find a gift that people are going to love this Christmas. Every store is just the zoo this time of year with all the animals. But from the comfort of my home, I found the Aura Frame, and it is a perfect way to keep in touch with relatives who are far away. You can upload unlimited photos and videos to your frame. Just download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. You can even preload photos before it ships. Keep adding from anywhere, anytime, totally updating. And you can share photos and videos effortlessly straight from your phone all year long. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code FIXIT at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code FIXIT, all caps. This deal is exclusive to listeners, and our frames sell out fast. So order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us checkout. Appreciate it. Jay, Secretary Johnson, I want to go to you next with increased access to voting. You got a specific recommendation here, which is passing the Election Day Holiday Act. It is, I want to underline how crazy it is. The United States still has a Election Day on Tuesdays because it's based on an agrarian calendar when people were coming back from market. Why haven't, what's the objection to giving folks a holiday on Election Day so people can do their civic duty?
Well, I'm sure that businesses, employers will cite loss of revenue for another federal holiday. You know, you could always have elections on weekends, for example, or just spread it out over the course of 3 days. The good news is that levels of voter participation in the last couple of election cycles have been going up. I attribute that to the positive aspects of social media. Americans are more engaged in their democracy, but, you know, they're engaged in certain weird ways. But levels of voter participation have been going up, but still, there are a lot of people who are just tuned out, even though they're registered, or they've never bothered to register, though they're eligible to register. So let's find ways to make it easier to do this. You know, we for example, trust the internet to engage in deposits, expenditures of money. We pay our tax, we submit our tax returns now electronically. Why can't we think in more sophisticated ways when it comes to the actual act of voting, making it easier for people to participate in our democracy? So we put forth a number of rather conventional reforms to encourage voting, to encourage voter participation, voter registration. And, you know, these are things that have been endorsed by a number of different organizations, but the overall intent is to simply get more people engaged in their democracy, along with, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, which is the more people are acquainted with how our democracy works and how our government works, the less suspicion and distrust they will have and that they will bring to the process. So that's what this recommendation is aiming to get at.
I mean, is mobile voting something you would recommend? That's been pushed by some folks. Other people are concerned about the security and decreasing trust in the vote, which obviously has been stirred up.
I trust my device to transfer lots and lots of my money. So I think I can trust my device to cast a vote for the local school board here in Montclair, New Jersey. So I don't see a reason why, you know, if my bank trusts my device, why local election officials are at the state level and the federal level can't either.
I want to stick with you, Jay, because next recommendation is related to cybersecurity of the democratic process. Former Homeland Yep. Security Director, you've got unique insight into this. What's striking is that the Trump administration has been gutting cybersecurity overall, Yep. but as it relates to election oversight in particular, that seems like an intentional disaster in the making.
So there's a history to this. As I was leaving office in 2016 and 17, I was told that I had the authority to declare election infrastructure in this country to be critical infrastructure in this country, along with financial services, utilities, and a bunch of other things. And I said, I do. how many agencies of government do I have to consult before I do that? They said, basically none. Just talk to the White House Homeland Security person. Great, let's do this. I ran into a buzzsaw of resistance from state election officials. Well, you're trying to take over our election process down here. This has been something we've run in the state level for centuries and centuries, and you're trying a federal takeover. Okay. So I ran into a whole lot of resistance to this idea until I was leaving office. And then when I left office, I just did it a couple days before I stepped out. And I was pleased that Secretary Kelly, my successor in the Trump administration, reaffirmed the designation. Since then, a lot of secretaries of state have done a lot of good work to improve the cybersecurity of the election infrastructure, but there's more to do. Paper balloting and so forth. There are a bunch of well-worn reforms out there. You know, the good news about all this, John, is, you know, take the 2020 election, for example. Mm-hmm. It was in the midst of COVID. It was probably the most secure, scrutinized election in history. 2024 was a close second. So the good news is we're moving in the right direction in terms of protection of our cybersecurity around our elections. We were very worried about a cyber attack on our election infrastructure in 2016 by the Russian government. That didn't happen. They attacked our democracy in other ways on social media. But we're moving in the right direction, and I believe that there's more to do.
Well, there is. Are you concerned about the current Trump administration undercutting cybersecurity around elections right now?
I'm concerned that the Trump administration, the Department of Homeland Security's attention has been drawn away from cybersecurity to, you know, deportations and, you know, the immigration enforcement. It's becoming a Department of Deportation as opposed to Homeland Security, which is a whole series of missions. And so I'm worried that cybersecurity seems to be de-emphasized in this administration, this Department of Homeland Security, and it's being left to the private sector and to officials at the state level to attend to.
Well, what could possibly go wrong? Judge, next recommendation is refine the role of the press and social media in promoting our democracy. You speak to a couple of statewide laws that require disclosure of campaign material that includes AI-generated content. Speak of bipartisan legislation called the Protect Elections from Deceptive AI Act. Tell us more about this piece.
That's a large piece, John. But if I may, I want to return first to the all-important question of access to voting that you asked the secretary about. And I'm going to grasp the nettle as Justice Scalia would say. I've had the privilege of not having to involve myself with politics for most of my life, and I'm grateful for that privilege. But while I was on the bench and removed from politics, I've been watching for the past 30 or 40 years this question about access to voting and watching the positions taken by the Republicans and the Democrats on that question. And long before I left the bench, I had come to this conclusion that the Republicans believed, beginning at least 20, 25 years ago, that the political demographics in America were beginning to trend away from Republicans. And that informed the Republicans' views on access to voting. So during that long period of time, for instance, there were many suggestions to improve access to voting that I thought were entirely unobjectionable. And obviously nonpartisan. But I watched year after year as the Republicans took the opposite position and argued, usually effectively, against those specific initiatives to improve access to voting. And so that's where we are today in America. And I say we as opposed to what I'm thinking, because I don't think that it's debatable, though of course the Republicans would debate it, that the Republicans, they almost universally favor more limited access to voting because they now believe that the demographics, political demographics, have moved away from them, John. So that's a long-winded way of someone who's not involved with politics of explaining what I believe is the central problem about with access to voting today in America.
Every year, billions of dollars are spent on gifts that gather dust. But the greatest gift isn't something you wear or display. It's just feeling your best, right? So Superpower helps your loved ones take control of their health so they can feel better, live longer, and have more time with you. And sticking around as long as possible for my family is definitely on my mind this year. Superpower is the new kind of health platform that helps you finally get answers about what's really happening inside your body and what to do about it. One simple lab test measures 100 plus biomarkers, hormones, metabolism, vitamins, minerals, thyroid, heart health, and more. They'll get a full health report and a personalized action plan built by clinicians, including nutrition, supplement, and lifestyle guidance. For just $199, every gift membership comes beautifully packaged in a free Superpower gift box, which is a $49 value, ready to wrap and give. It's a thoughtful, life-changing gift for your partner, your parents, or even yourself. Superpower not only gives you an initial plan, but it tracks your results over your lifetime. Each test builds on the last, giving you a full picture of your progress year after year. So give your loved ones something that actually lasts, better health, and more time with you. Go to superpower.com/gift to get a free $49 premium gift box with your gifted membership. After you sign up, they'll ask you how you heard about them, and please mention this podcast, How to Fix It on the Bulwark, to support our show. Unfortunately, that does seem self-evident if you look at our recent history, although it might not be borne out by when Republicans and Democrats are doing better, because more engaged voters tend to be voting increasingly Democrat, less engaged voters increasingly voting Republican.
John, if I could on this.
Yes, sir.
There's a larger backdrop to this whole discussion, particularly when it comes to the role of the press and social media in our democracy. During our work, Judge Luttig and I did a listening tour in various different states. And on one of the stops we made was in Philadelphia at the National Constitution Center. And Judge Luttig and I were standing around, and he took me into this large room and showed me this huge slab on the wall of this large room with a reprint of the First Amendment. And Judge Luttig and his wife personally paid to have this large slab hung in the National Constitution Center. And what struck me about reading the First Amendment on the wall is it's just 42 words with a period and a semicolon. But in those 42 words are embedded the principles of freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly. And what that brings home about our democracy, about our constitutional order, is that for the life of this republic, we have depended upon electing and appointing government officials who adhere not just to the letter of their oath, but also adhering to constitutional and legal norms. And so if you elect someone to high office who has no respect for constitutional and legal norms, no respect for the history of how we have interpreted the law and interpreted the Constitution, They're going to push the envelope in ways that are untested, that will push the judiciary to the brink, that will push the democracy to the brink. And I'm afraid that's what we're seeing now, you know, to abandon the principle of birthright citizenship enshrined in the 14th Amendment simply because you think you can, is a perfect example of this. And it's being put to the Supreme Court. And I cannot predict or guarantee how that's going to come out. I think I know how it would have come out a generation ago, but I have no idea how it's going to come out now.
Well, and this speaks to the larger danger that's a backdrop to a lot of this as members of the American Bar Association, which is the judiciary has been consciously made more ideological, and that means more partisan. And increasingly, we're seeing it's more partisan than ideological, because a lot of the things the Trump administration's pushing for are not rooted in any resemblance of constitutional conservatism. I want to stay with you, Jay, because there's a piece about enhance the obligations of lawyers in our democracy.
Yeah.
You are you recently left Paul Weiss, a great storied firm that caught a lot of flack for a larger effort to make law firms sort of bend the knee for fear of what ultimately was a collective action problem that would lose access to federal contracts or even federal courthouses. You're also the chairman of the board of trustees at Columbia University. A lot of universities have felt similar pressure. But have you been surprised at the extent to which many law firms under the rubric of fiduciary responsibility to the firm's bottom line have fallen in line, at least for the time being? And what's the remedy for that?
So you're correct. I left Paul Weiss at the end of June 2025. I was with the firm off and on for 40 years, except for my years in government. It's a very, very different firm today than it was 40 years ago when I joined in 1984. I won't criticize Paul Weiss because you don't bite the hand that's paying you a pension. But when you look at the firms that have settled and the firms that have not, they tend to break down into two business models. The firm is primarily driven by its corporate practice, where clients come to the firm to negotiate a merger transaction and obtain regulatory approval from the government. You've settled. If you're primarily a litigation firm, you fight. And that's how they've been breaking down in general. But this is an example of a government that does not respect legal and constitutional norms, that is going after law firms simply because the president doesn't like politically what they've been doing. And, you know, the courts have had to intervene and prevent this in the lawsuits that have been brought. But a year ago, who would have thought this? Whoever would have dared imagine that a president and his administration would go after lawyers in this way?
Well, and yet here we are. Judge, you know, looking back at the legal profession, at the increasing partisanship, I mean, this is a broader set of recommendations you have for American democracy. But looking over the scope of your time, as someone who was a proud conservative, but above all, a judge, a lawyer, someone with a non-fiduciary responsibility to upholding the law, how do you think we unring this bell? Because it seems to me we need a whole of government and society effort to undo the damage that's been
done. John, if I could interrupt before he speaks. Sure. Michael Luttig is still a proud conservative. You know, what drives him today is his passion for the Constitution and the rule of law.
Oh, 100%.
Which is not, you know, no one political party or no one ideology has a monopoly on that. And so what I've observed about this man is he's a conservative. He's a Reagan conservative, but he has a commitment and a loyalty to the Constitution and the oath that he took. So I'll stop there and let him speak.
No, Judge, I mean, you know, that almost goes without saying. You are a consistent constitutional conservative. And I think part of it is the reason you've been a profile and courage to so many is that you've had the courage of your convictions consistently outside the pressures of the partisan economy and cliques that have twisted the character of so many and hurt our system of government in the process. So not only I'd love for you to reflect on that journey, but more specifically, how we redeem something constructive out of this degradation we've been living through.
So, John, and thank you, Jay and John, for those comments. But to your question earlier, how do we unring the bell? Well, first we have to acknowledge what bell needs to be unrung. And that bell, as I've been, you know, saying unapologetically now for, you know, several years, is that the President of the United States has literally corrupted America's democracy and its rule of law. And then to your last question of the Secretary, part and parcel of that has been his corruption of the legal profession and the law firms. That's the bell that has to be unrung. Now, that's no mere bell to try to, you know, to continue the analogy. But this is for the first time in American history, John, in almost 250 years, America has never experienced anything like this at all. Not a single time in American history did I recently write, was I aware of a president of the United States who intentionally and deliberately proceeded to violate the Constitution of the United States or a law of the United States. And this president has done that every day now for the past 10 months. Take, for example, the birthright citizenship challenge that he lodged on his first day in office. And by the way, it was not a challenge. Donald Trump purported to have the authority to write out of the Constitution the birthright citizenship in the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. So how do we unring this bell? Of late, I have said, I don't know how this bell can ever be unrung. And I have said most recently, I don't know that America can ever return to being the envy of the world for its democracy and its rule of law in the foreseeable future. Now, if you want to speculate, which I don't like to do, could we once again be the nation that we have been for 250 years?
Yes.
In 100 years from now, or let's say 50, it's possible, but we can never unring the bell that has been rung. Never again will the world view America in the same way that it has for the past 250 years.
Look, there's no question the damage that's been done by this administration to America's reputation as a beacon of freedom, democracy, and liberty, and a stable ally for fellow democracies around the world has been damaged. But I don't want to allow any note of defeatism to end this conversation. First of all, because you all have put forward a list of recommendations. Second of all, because it's ultimately up to us as citizens, not subjects, to redeem something constructive out of the damage that we are witnessing in real time. And we absolutely have to rededicate ourselves to strengthening American democracy for the 21st century by implementing reforms in a broad-based way to redeem the promise of our country in our lifetimes. You know, this is not something that we can say, hopefully for our grandchildren, they can redeem the promise of America. That's our responsibility of citizens right now. And so I want people to be galvanized by this experience, because the lessons of history teach us anything. It's that you don't declare defeat. You'd have to stand up, straighten your civic backbone, and demand the kind of changes to make us be consistent with the spirit of America as it's always existed, however imperfectly. So that's, to me, why your recommendations are so important, not just because of the positions you speak from. We're not going to be able to do a light switch with regard to our allies' trust in America. But we can take it upon ourselves as citizens to try to redeem something constructive out of this absolute degradation of our democracy that Donald Trump has perpetuated. And that's our responsibility as living generations of Americans right now. And we need to seize that responsibility clearly and without any hesitation, because it's on us.
God bless you, John. You're the very kind of person who could lead America out of the abyss.
Well, thank you, Judge.
John, I believe in the pendulum theory of American politics. Every 4 or 8 years, the electorate wants something radically different from what they had before. And that's being tested right now, obviously. In many respects, the bell cannot be unrung, but I suspect and believe that in the next presidential election cycle, Americans are going to want something very different from what they have now, if history is a guide. If I could add this, I remember when I finished law school in 1982, our speaker at Columbia Law School was Ambassador Andrew Young, civil rights icon, who was with Dr. King through the civil rights movement. And he said, in your lifetime, you're going to see and do things beyond your current comprehension. And he was absolutely right. First of all, I never could have comprehended the iPhone and the internet in 1982, because it didn't exist then. It was beyond my imagination. And when Andrew Young said that at Columbia in 1982, there was another black kid on campus named Barack Hussein Obama, who I didn't know. But if you had told me then that somebody named Barack Hussein Obama, black like me, with a first African name, was going to be president of the United States in my lifetime, and I was going to be in his cabinet leading something called the Department of Homeland Security, I wouldn't have believed it. So my optimism for the future of this country is endless, though I do not in any respect underestimate the challenges that Judge Luttig has laid out for us.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you all for this report from the American Bar Association. It is a reminder, as President Obama often quoted Dr. King as saying, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice, to which I think we would only need to add, but we need to will it that way. Judge Michael Luttig, Secretary Jay Johnson, thank you to your service to your nation for this report with constructive solutions on how to fix it. And thank you for joining us. Be well.
Thank you.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.